facing our community, and to build and engage a larger network of conscious and caring consumers like you. Since the pandemic, we've pivoted the events to include other industries for a new Open for Business series. I'm excited to announce our partners for tonight and our monthly events moving forward: Chamber of Commerce of Hawaii, Hawaii Farm Bureau Federation, Hawaii Food Industry Association, Hawaii Lodging and Tourism Association, the Hawaii Restaurant Association, and the Hawaii Retail Merchants Association. I'd also like to welcome a few members from our state legislature who are joining us in the audience tonight. We have Senators Donovan Dela Cruz, Mike Gabbard, Michelle Kidani, Representatives Della Bellotti, Amy Peruso, Senator Glenn Wakai, Representative Tina Wilderberger, Ryan Yamane, Kyle Yamashita, and Council Members Felicia Cowden and Tommy Waters. Thank you for being here to listen, and we hope you join the conversation tonight. We have a great lineup for you. We have 7 speakers from our local restaurant industry. We are very excited to hear from tonight. So our program may run a little longer than our usual 1 hour. If you have any questions for our speakers tonight, please put them in the Q&A feature here on Zoom, and we'll get them during the Q&A portion after the panel discussion. First, we'll hear from our economist, Paul Brubaker, about how the shutdown of our local restaurant industry affects our local economy.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for inviting me to join you guys tonight. And sorry, we can't all get together over a nice dinner somewhere, but I'm sure that'll come soon enough. I'm going to start things rolling this evening with some background information on the health situation and economic situation facing the food industry, tie it a little bit together with agriculture, and then send the topic off to the group here for discussion. I believe they are going to let me share my screen. So here we go. So just to be clear, you're welcome to get a copy of these slides from the organizers of tonight's event. And I'd be happy to discuss things with any of you later if you want to track me down. I'm not that hard to find. About half the people introduced so far have my email address, so happy to help whenever I can. All of my slides have links at the bottom of each of the data slides so that you can find the data yourself. And I want to talk about the health situation, the food service industry, and agriculture just briefly before we get into the discussion with the food industry professionals. I think it's important to remember, I know we're getting COVID fatigue, but it's important to remember that the lockdowns and the social distancing and all these other non-pharmaceutical interventions are not the reason the economy is messed up. The pandemic is the reason the economy is messed up. And it was just the fact that about a month ago on Oahu, but also on Maui and the Big Island during the course of August, things got a little gnarly and we just had to shut down again. Here are the data. I mean, you can just download these data and there's the links right at the bottom of your screen. So if we use, say, the worst country in Europe as an example of the first and second wave in these 6 months of the global pandemic, you can see in Spain, the normalized daily COVID case count, these are moving averages, the daily case count got up to about 170, 180 per million persons in the first wave in Spain, and they had some trouble knocking it down. And then we did pretty well in the spring, and our stay-at-home order was relatively effective. We were largely cohesive, culturally and socially cohesive society, and we pulled it off. But then in the summer, it broke down, and there's the data. So Oahu was worse than Spain during the course of this summer, and Spain reopened their tourism. That was their excuse. The only excuse on Oahu is you bucks for lolos who went partying or whatever you guys are doing. So we had to put the lockdown in. It's been relatively effective over the last couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks now. Search testing has really identified where the contact tracers can go, and we're doing well. But I mean, this is pretty bad, you guys. Oahu was worse than Brazil. You know what I mean? How's that for bragging rights? And most places in the country are going through something like this. They're a lot worse than Hawaii for sure. But my kids are all in the, or two of my kids are in the food service industry in Denver area, greater metro area. And, you know, Boulder County is going through this thing where they've had like four waves and they punch up above 50 cases per million. And they tamp it down and then they punch up and they tamp it down. And they, with school, you know, University of Colorado's back in session. So, you know, they've had a little breakout again, and I'm sure they'll tamp that down. Now, there are many places that were worse. Florida, most of the deep south, the Sun Belt just got outrageously bad. I mean, New York peaked at 500 cases per million back in April. Phoenix was at 600 cases per million on, you know, 4th of July weekend. So yes, it could be way worse. But the point is, you don't want it to be anything like that. So that's why we had to go through what we've just gone through the last 2 weeks. I know it's a pain in the okoli, but look, it's working. We're bringing those numbers down. And I got to say, the neighbor islands haven't had it as bad. So props to them. You know, if we get that case count down below 50 cases per million per day, these are new cases, daily new cases. We get down below 50, get the transmission rate, the RT rate. You can just look it up. It's like about 0.88 right now. If you get that transmission rate below one, if you get the positivity rate in the testing, which is about 4% on Oahu right now, down about, you know, 3% on Big Island and below 1% on Maui. You get that down, you know, below 3%, and I'm sorry, 2% on the Big Island right now, but you get it below 3 and you got a shot. You put all those things together, you got a shot at moving forward. So, and listen, I know the interventions are burdensome, but yeah, you know, like the 14-day quarantine is a good example, bruh. The travel stopped before the quarantine. So I'm just saying, yes, the quarantine, the 14-day quarantine is a reason people aren't coming to Hawaii, but so is the novel coronavirus. And the 14-day quarantine was not why people stopped coming to Hawaii, because the quarantine didn't even go into place until after people stopped flying to Hawaii. And you look at the decline in passenger counts from the end of June through the end of, through the early part of September, same thing, bro. You can just look up what's going on in a destination and make a decision to cancel. So we got to keep these numbers down in order to get going, get the reopening and actually get tourism reopened again. One silver lining of what we've been going through are these amazing daily data sets we now have. All of the big data, you know, scrapers that, you know, Google with its mobility data. We'll look at some OpenTable.com data on restaurant bookings. All of these big data sets are really helping us understand on a daily, you know, on a day-by-day basis what's happening. And here's a typical pattern, right? This is spending of residents. We're using their debit and credit card, you know, swipes. So spending by residents relative to what it was in January. Yeah, you got that? So if it's zero, it's same as January. Again, you see the drop before the stay-at-home order, right? That's people aren't dumb, right? They know the hurricane's coming. They go out and go buy toilet paper, right? You see the drop in spending. You see the rebound over time. We've been doing pretty good this summer. And then look, at the end of July, the spending started to drift off again because people can see the COVID case counts on Oahu going back up and they start to pull back. Yes, the mayor felt an obligation to reimpose a lockdown, but that was already happening, you know, people choosing not to put themselves at risk. And we can look at spending in different kinds of venues. So these are the same data. By the way, it's all in the links are all in the bottom right there. All right, look at the spending on grocery and food stores versus the spending by residents on accommodation on foods and food services. Now, most of that's food services, right? Again, zero is January. So there we're going along. And as soon as the president say, hey, about a miracle, Oh, everybody's like, yeah, no way, bro. We all went and bought toilet paper, right? We all went and bought Clorox, whatever the kind. And so you see those grocery stores numbers go up and you see the food services numbers go down again before the stay-at-home order. All the stay-at-home order did was validate the behavior that households were already engaging in to protect themselves and their families. And then this, you know, we can see things getting better. People start coming back. You got to pay attention to what's happening now. You can see right now that there's, for now, I mean, it's not over till it's over. But right now, you're looking at grocery and food store spending about 20% higher than it was back in January, February. And you're looking at food service spending about 20% lower than it was in January. And look, food at home and food away from home used to be each 10% of total expenditure. So they used to be equal. And now you can see from the shopping pattern what they're spending on. It's favoring the food away from home right now. And as you know, the food distribution system has had to make those adjustments. You know, nobody knows if it's going to stay like this, but you have to prepare yourself for the possibility that it could be different in the future, that the new normal might be different. These are slightly different data. These are Google mobility data. So we're tracking smartphone movements now. And again, you know, zero is the benchmark relative to January 2020, how much time people spend in different locations. And this is a really interesting comparison because here, the grocery and pharmacy time spent numbers are actually lower, right? They're 20% lower than in January. But you just saw that the spending was 20% higher. So people aren't going to the store, to the grocery store, and aren't spending as much time there as they used to, but they're spending more. Again, you see these patterns evolving. We don't, and this is another one where the thing started to go down again before the recent lockdown. So people, they're not dummies, bro. They're watching what's happening and they're changing their behavior to respond. So do I know if these are all going to go back to what they used to be? No, I don't. But I'm pretty sure you should start thinking about what the world will look like if they don't go back to the way they think things were before, and how you would position your business to be one of the winners in that new normal, however it turns out. These are these amazing OpenTable.com numbers. So, you know, you open table, you book a nice dinner, you know, for your significant other or whatever. Once again, you know, zero here is the we're benchmarking. In this case, zero is no change from last year, same day. Yeah, these are daily data. So here again, you see the spending plummet well before the stay-at-home order. The stay-at-home order comes after people already stopped going out, or right at the moment people stopped going out. Boom, the stay-at-home order validates. That's the appropriate behavior. Just chill for a couple months. We'll see if we can contain the coronavirus, which we had. Bro, Hawaii was New Zealand on Memorial Day, and then we messed up this summer. And that's on us. There's no tourists to blame it on. But anyway, you can see the reopening and all these other jurisdictions, Scottsdale, Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, places that had, right, the big COVID case counts back in July. They kind of reopened too early. They kind of overdid it once they did open. They make too many COVID parties, whatever. Honolulu, it never came back that much. Now, these are a little different because I'm pretty sure these include tourists, right? These are all open table bookings. But again, you can see how Honolulu had to go to zero in the recent Oahu lockdown, while other cities are, you know, either trying to, you know, mount their recoveries being somewhat more cautious in that. So, you know, it is what it is, to quote some lunatic, and it will be what it's going to be, and it's all up to us, you guys. I think it's really important to understand that the manifestation of this, the coronavirus impacts in food service, is part of a larger chain of linkages that, as we know, is affecting industries like agriculture that are sort of, you know, the backward linkages in the supply chain, affecting the forward linkages and the relationships, for example, in accommodation and arts, entertainment, and recreation, which is, you know, a total beatdown in that industry, right? Have you been to a concert lately? In agriculture, we know that the linkages are strong, but both of these sectors are relatively small, and it's important to remember why they're small. They're small because they're so productive, right? Agriculture, and then through the food distribution system, into food services and drinking places. These are shares of gross product in Hawaii. They're so productive. They're so productive. Food is so cheap that people are obese and diabetic. Think about that for a second. In 1920, 60% of workers were in agriculture in Hawaii. 60%. In 2010, it was 0.6%. 1/100th share of the workforce. So yes, agriculture has had its rise and fall in different pursuits and crop and livestock industries, and there are a number of the names sponsoring us tonight have made their name or are hoping to make their name in the next wave, whatever comes next. So this is my enumeration. By the way, agriculture is so small, the state doesn't even measure it anymore. So this has probably got to change. I'm just saying. And here I've broken out the different industries. So I think while it's interesting to think about where agriculture goes in the future, and it's possible it will have nothing to do with food. Think about that for a second. There's no question that these linkages between the food industry in Hawaii and crop and livestock agriculture as a feeder are really important. Let me just make one final observation about productivity growth. Here's an ag industry in Hawaii that's still one of the largest around. It's a biotech sector, plant breeding in the maize genome. And as you may know, it's a family thing for me. When modern genetics was put into action in corn production in the United States in the first third of the 20th century, corn yields increased sevenfold. So basically they've gone from 26 bushels per acre a year to about 176 or something like that. I mean, it's crazy how much productivity has occurred in this and in other agricultural activities. So that's why it's so small, but that's also why we can feed ourselves and feed the world. And so I look forward to the day when we can all put that back together, back, you know, over here in Hawaii, where we're just suffering from this novel coronavirus. Just to summarize, pandemics depress the economy. Public health interventions do not. These are not substitutes. It's the same thing, okay? If you mitigate the novel coronavirus transmission, you can safely restore economic opportunity. And we're on the threshold of being able to do that once again in the next few weeks. I think the neighbor islands are probably already there. Oahu could be shortly. Don't mess it up. Okay, food at home and food away from home used to be about an equal share of household budgets. There's been a change there. It may be temporary. It may be permanent. There may be other things about the food service industry that changed that you need to start thinking about and to position yourselves for if you can make your way, you know, make your way until the vaccine arrives and we're all good to go. These linkages, even among small industries in Hawaii, are really important. They're a source of value added. And I think we should celebrate that and plan our way into that future. So thanks for your time. I went longer than I thought, and I will stop sharing.
Thank you, Paul, for those insightful comments. Well, you know, we really all want to reopen our economy and get going and to do what we can to help the situation. So thank you again for that insightful presentation. Before I introduce the moderator, I'd like to introduce Victor Lim of the Restaurant Association, our partner for this evening, to say a few words. Victor, are you there? You have to unmute. Yeah.
Okay. Hi, good evening, everybody. On behalf of the Hawaii Restaurant Association, I just want to take this opportunity to thank a few people that has tirelessly working on our behalf the past 5 months. And top on the list is Denise Yamaguchi with the ACT Foundation, Jason Higa. I don't know whether you guys realize that. It's not only is he running his restaurants, but he's fighting on your behalf with the legislature and the city council on an ongoing basis on behalf of the industry. You know, Sherry McNamara with the Chamber of Commerce of Hawaii and Tina Yamaki from Retail Merchants. These are all the unsung heroes that are fighting every day on our behalf. So I just want to say thank you on behalf of the Hawaii Restaurant Association, and we are so proud to partner with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Victor. Now I'd like to introduce our moderator for tonight's panel discussion, Kelly Simek from KHON.
Aloha, everybody. Thank you to the Ag Foundation for having me, and thank you so much to Denise. Now, as Paul mentioned in one of his last points there, he said pandemics depress the economy, and I have a feeling that's kind of going to be the theme of this evening. Unfortunately, as we all know, our restaurants and bars are just being completely devastated by this pandemic. And this evening, we're going to be hearing more from our panelists about how restaurants and bars have been handling this pandemic and how they've changed their operations. And also, and this one, of course, very important, what actions need to be taken by the public and especially from our government for them to survive. So tonight we are hearing from a very special panel of speakers from Hawaii's restaurant industry. And I did want to mention, for those that are tuning in tonight, if you have any questions, please put them in the Q&A feature here on Zoom. And if maybe it's directed specifically to one of our panelists, you can put that as well. And we'll be getting to those questions coming up in the Q&A portion after the panel discussion. So please feel free to ask anything that's on your mind. All right, now I'm going to be calling on each of our panelists now to introduce themselves and tell us about how things are going from where they're tuning in from. And first up, our panelist is Dylan Ching. Dylan is the Vice President of Operations at TS Restaurants, Duke's and Hula Grill here on Oahu, and Kioki's, Kimo's, and Leilani's on Neighbor Islands.
Well, hi, everybody. Thank you for having me. Yeah, also Duke's in Kauai. We have got 8 restaurants in Hawaii and 5 in California. So I am in Oahu, and we are, as everybody knows, back on a to-go only model, which, you know, is what it is. We're trying hard. Everybody's fighting the good fight. You know, it could easily go down a more negative path, but I mean, we have to do whatever we can do. I just wanted, you know, to say to everybody that to-go is great for most of us as a supplement, but no way near what we need or what will take for us to get even through a mid or short term. So I know, and I appreciate everybody, please go out and support all your restaurants, but this, it's not going to get us through it. So I just want everybody to understand that. Thanks,
Dylan. All right, next up we have Kevin Haney, who is chef and owner at 12th Avenue Grill, Chop Chop Rotisserie, and partner at Cocoa Head Cafe here on Oahu.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kevin. I'm really glad to be here discussing this with everybody. And yes, you know, I have 3 restaurants. All of them are closed at the moment. Under the circumstances, we felt it was the best thing to do. I don't know if we're going to talk about this a little bit later, or would you like me to talk about this now?
We'll touch on it a bit more as well coming up. Okay. In a bit. All right. Thanks, Kevin. And next up, we have Jason Higa. He is CEO of the FCH Enterprises and Zippy's Restaurant.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, everyone, for joining this panelist discussion. Glad to be here. Yeah, we've been having a very, you know, tough experience with the COVID situation. We have had one permanent closure of one of our 24 restaurants. We've closed our Pulakai ballroom operation, all because of the, you know, COVID impact. And right now we're in survival mode, as I think most other restaurants are. You know, it's a daily struggle. We are doing everything that we can within our control to survive. And I expect that we'll be in, you know, survival mode for several months to come, hopefully not too much longer. Thank you.
Jason. All right, next up, our next panelist is Henry Yoon, founding partner at DB Restaurant Group, where that includes Cafe Duck Butt, DB Grill, and also Mad Bene here on Oahu.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you very much. First, thank you, Denise, and the Hawaii Agricultural Foundation, and all the participants who bought all the meals. Thank you very much for spending this time. Sorry, it's not the best circumstances to share a meal or a drink, and hopefully we won't spoil your appetites. So please continue drinking. I think Jason hit upon a lot of the points. I think the first shutdown was an existential crisis for a lot of us in the restaurant industry, about thinking about who we are, pivoting. All this pivoting has sort of left us a little dazed and confused, to be very fair. It was a big test of our values about how we do things in our culture, for what we do at DB Restaurant Group. I think the second shutdown is really, as Jason alluded to it again, about survival. We're in the ninth inning. It's the 2-minute drill in football. And, you know, you can use any sort of analogy. Again, it's really about survival. And we're all trying to do what it takes to weather through for the next few months. So, hopefully, fingers crossed, everybody will try to do the right things to help our industry to survive.
Thanks, Henry. All right, next up we have Leanne Wong, who is the executive chef at Papa Aina at the Pioneer Inn in Lahaina, Maui, and owner and executive chef at Cocoa Head Cafe.
Hi. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Kind of a weird situation. So I am still peripherally working with Cocoa Head. So I'm like in communication with the chefs and the staff, which everyone's currently furloughed again. We're shut down on Oahu for obvious reasons, just because takeout, it's more expensive to operate based on the takeout model. It's just cheaper just to shut down. But the situation is very different in Maui. I just took over the restaurant at a small boutique hotel in Old Lahaina, and, we're open for business. The hotel itself shut down for like a month and a half back, I think, like, you know, April into May a little bit. And we renovated, and I have a brand new restaurant that I can't use, but we do have this really awesome outdoor courtyard. So we're doing full service dining the courtyard. It's me, my chef de cuisine, and our assistant manager, and then we hire some hourly wait staff every now and then. It's like basically 3-man circus 7 days a week. And that is, you know, we're trying to stay alive. Like that's, you know, it's like we're doing everything. I'm doing everything from like, you know, ordering, inventory, menu planning, dishes. My kid just got home. Sorry if you hear a little bit of screaming. You know, it's getting back to the grit of what it means to be a chef and try and run a restaurant by yourself.
All right, thanks so much, Leanne. All right, next up we have Gavin Onishi, who is executive chef at Contemporary Flavors Catering and Mark's Place on Kauai.
Hi, thank you very much for this opportunity. Thank you very much for the panel. Compared to everybody else in this panel, I feel very stupid, but I'm here to learn. I'm here to tell any experiences that we have here on Kauai that we have been having, and listen to the experiences from the other islands and share. And this is kind of what I really was excited about, because this is the process and I love the process. And this is the process of us to get together and share ideas and to get through this, because I mean, I put in 20 years of my life doing this plus, and I'm sure the rest of the people on this panel have put in, you know, more than, and this is our industry, and I want our industry to survive, and I don't want anybody to fail, even though realistically people are, but this is just a way to share, and this is a way to get better, and this is a way to get through this. So I'm happy to be here. So thank you.
Thanks, Gavin. All right, and then finally, our last panelist is Chad Yang, owner of on Hawaii Island.
Hello, Kelly. Hi, everyone. I'm in Hilo, Hawaii County, in the Grand Aniloa. Been here since, surviving since March, and plan on being here, fight to the end.
Thank you, of course, to all our panelists for taking the time to be a part of this. And of course, we're going to be now talking more about what you all have been experiencing and having to go through in the last 6 months. So first off, of course, with the two government mandated closures and the dine-in operations and our islands closed to trans-Pacific travel, it's affected businesses in many ways. So first off, let's start with Dylan Chang from TS Restaurants. Now, Dylan, tourism now at a halt. The streets of Waikiki are eerily empty. So how has that affected operations for you guys at Duke's Waikiki, as well as Hula Grill here on Oahu?
Thank you, Kelly. Well, it's interesting. From the start, you know, March was really, you know, like many of everybody else said, it wasn't worth staying open for to-go. So we closed. There was nobody around. It was post-apocalyptic looking. But being on down there almost every day, I know from what you see on TV and everything, it's nowhere near, you know, what it normally is, but it had come back to life. I mean, there was the local people were enjoying Waikiki. And I think, you know, that's been kind of seen on the news a little bit. And as we got open, you know, it's been fun to try and, you know, get creative and do new things. And we, you know, we were doing, you know, nothing near what we normally do, but getting all the local people down in there and showing that the local people do really like Waikiki, and they enjoyed surfing and they enjoy having, you know, some food out there and just enjoy what we were doing. And it really caused us to, you know, tweak our menus and tweak our approach, and it's going to make us better in the end, get better at to go. It's different now than it was, you know, like I say, in March. There's more life down there, but it needs to get better, whether it be with more local people, with the shutdown over for local people, or, you know, some resemblance of visitors. But I would say for myself, it was sustainable for our model a little bit with what we were doing for like a short to mid run with the local economy. So it was very, very devastating for us to go back to a closure, because like Leanne said, we shouldn't be open right now, but we're staying open, hoping we get to open in another couple of weeks, because it is really hard to start and stop. You know, you have to, it's really hard to start and stop. So if we can keep some blood in the veins, it'll help us restart. You know, I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully we get there. Just for some context, you know, those two restaurants in Waikiki, we employ about 500 people normally. When we got back open at Duke's, we could do about 100 people, and we're not open at Hula Grill. So with the height of a local economy in Waikiki, I can employ 100 people, not 500 anymore. So that just goes to show, like, if I'm doing that in the prime number one spot in Waikiki, it's hard for everybody else. So I feel everybody, and, you know, keep up the good fight in all of our markets.
Right. Thanks so much, Dylan. And okay, I have to ask, because your background looks delicious. What dish is that? Which restaurant of yours is it from?
That's from Duke's Waikiki, and most of our Dukes, like we have one in Kauai, they run the same, you know, pulled pork sandwich there. So you can get them in Kauai right now, and you can sit down and watch the football game, or they're doing it right now. So I'm very happy to have those Kauai restaurants open, and they're doing amazing. I'm so happy to be open for the community over there. And I mean, it's been amazing to watch them do what they're doing there. So thank everybody in Kauai for all the support.
That's good to hear. Thanks so much, Dylan. Ooh. Yeah. Hungry. I'm going to eat right after this. All right. Next up, we're talking with Chad Yang from Hula Hula's. Now, Chad, of course, your restaurant is also at a hotel resort, the Grand Aniloa in Hilo. So what was it like pre-COVID, and how does it compare to the situation that you're in right now?
So pre-COVID, we had our hotel occupancy was in the upper 90s. Hotel was basically sold out. Restaurant was sold out. And it was, our shutdown happened end of March. So we were getting ready for Miramana. And so the town, all the small business was excited. We were excited. Yeah, I mean, we would complain about booking events or taking tables of walk-ins of 12 top without reservations. And now, fast forward to now, I mean, you know, we on a daily basis, we try to keep our staff motivated, taking proactive measures to keep the guests, the people safe, you know, answering, assisting on unemployment, leave, how does this furlough work, and basically community enforcing the COVID policy. And lastly, it's a lot of praying. You know, there are days I feel like I'm a pastor versus a restaurateur, but yep.
All right, thanks so much, Chad. All right, next question is for Leanne Wong, of course, from Papaina at the Pioneer Inn. Now, Leanne, as we were talking earlier, you recently had to make that very hard decision to once again temporarily close Coco Head Cafe in Kaimuki, at least for the time being, and of course, due to the shutdown here on Oahu. So as you are now based on Maui, and of course, at the helm of Papaina at the Pioneer Inn in Papaina, how are the shutdowns here on Oahu affecting you there?
We got a new Nancy. You know, so I Old Lahaina is like Haliva, right? So it's always crowded. It is a town that is 90% visitor dependent. So when, you know, the shutdown happened, it was, I mean, it turned into a ghost town. It was kind of like, oh, nature came back. It was very quiet, very peaceful. Our hotel's next to the banyan tree. I mean, it was like, the harbor was empty, you know, it was kind of eerie, like a ghost town, and at the same time, a little bit peaceful, but it, you know, it was, I've never seen Lahaina like that. I mean, a lot of people haven't, please. Can you take him, please? Sorry, excuse me. Hold on. Excuse me. So we've been, the hotel reopened in May, and we reopened as a new concept, and we thankfully have this beautiful historic outdoor courtyard. So we were able to really adjust well to the new COVID rules in terms of social distancing, you know, and slowly, you know, we've been implementing all the COVID rules and sort of watch all these things develop with, you know, the mask wearing. And because it's a hotel and it's a Best Western property, we had to wait to get orders from the corporate office on what, how we should proceed and with the COVID and all that. So, you know, we're open for business, but the whole town is still boarded up. So we've got to trickle in. And then when the inter-island quarantine was lifted, that was great because it was, we got a lot of travelers from other islands. We had, you know, business started to pick up, tourism started to pick up within the state. And that was really, really awesome. And then, yeah, then everybody decided to go party on 4th of July. And here we are. So, you know, and it's, we've stayed open. And it's, again, you know, the impact that this has had on the employees. I mean, some of the cooks, some of the people that I worked with before we shut down and we had to let everybody go in March, I guess it was, some of the people had been working there for 20 years. And, you know, they're still out of work and there's kind of like no end in sight right now. I don't know. You can't set a date, you know, you can't say when we're going to reopen because you just don't know when tourism is going to come back. You don't know when business is going to come back. And right now what we're seeing, especially in Lahaina, most of everybody who lives on the west side works in hospitality and they're actually out of work. So, you know, this morning I drove to work and there's like literally a line half a mile long of cars waiting to pick up food boxes from the local church. So everybody, it's a tough time on the west side. I mean, if you go into like Kahului, it's a little busy, you know, but it's, you know, towns, the whole west side is suffering. Obviously, Wailea, Paia, it's just, Maui is very much a visitor-based economy. And so it's just been, you know, it's been hard, but at the same time, it's given us sort of a directive to cook for the locals. So, you know, with the new restaurant concept and our new dining, we're just, you know, basically sticking to our social media, doing events every day, pop-ups every weekend. And it's just trying to just get the local people to come out and come enjoy Old Lahaina while it's not crowded. So, yeah, it's very different. And, you know, obviously, as long as Oahu is under duress, the outer islands are going to be on lockdown. And I actually signed a petition yesterday with the Lahaina business. Basically, a bunch of businesses want to reopen Maui tourism. It was to Mayor Victorino. It was basically pleading to say that, you know, how can we reopen Maui separately without having to bottleneck or go through Oahu? Because flights from West Coast can land in Maui. There's just, you know, it's a very different situation over here. So, and, you know, we've had our little outbreaks of COVID, but thankfully those numbers are still fairly low.
And hopefully that continues. Thanks so much, Leanne. All right, now, of course, during these, there's a lot of adjustments to accommodate for changing guidelines that are in place. So let's talk a bit more about that. So Jason Higa from Zippy's. Now, Jason, of course, Zippy's has always been a local favorite for both takeout as well as dine-in. So how much has the dine-in closures and the restaurant restrictions affected the Zippy's restaurants?
Yeah, it's been, to be honest, very overwhelming. And I'm very thankful to, you know, our managers, our staff members, for, you know, making the adjustments that we've had to make. In many ways, it's been an opportunity to do things that we had been thinking about doing, but you know, maybe never had the motivation, you know, to make the changes. And so there's definitely been some silver linings. I think you see that with mobile app and with phone orders, you know, definitely our customer base have shifted, you know, to those means of ordering and payment. And, you know, so we've adjusted accordingly. We've done everything to do things in a safer manner because of COVID. Everything from the basics of hand washing, proper mask wearing, physical distancing. We've reduced our menu. We've done daily health screening, which has been a significant undertaking. And we're in the process of bringing curbside, to all of our locations. And so if you are not, you know, ordering through your mobile app and paying, we're going to find a means so that you can stay in your car. We can take your order, we can take your payment, and we can bring your order, you know, to your car. So, you know, anything and everything that we can do to make the process much more safer. Same with our dine-in. You know, we did not reopen when we could, but we waited and we wanted to ensure that we could reopen and create a safe dine-in experience. And really that meant everything from temperature checks, having sanitizer available, doing contact tracing for all of our customers that come in through our dine-in. We take their name, we take their number if they're willing to provide it, and we have that database available in that worst case scenario. It's been about training and retraining our staff. You know, we've done that to the nth degree to ensure that we do not have any missteps in the process. What I will say is that I think many of the changes that we are making, and I believe for other restaurants, they're going to be permanent changes. There's no doubt in my mind that we're going to continue some form of health screening of our employees before they come into the workplace. There's no doubt that mobile ordering, phone orders are going to continue to escalate. And there's no doubt in my mind that curbside will be an option that we will continue to provide. So what I would say in summary is that, yes, it's been challenging. Yes, it's been overwhelming, but there are, you know, some positive outcomes, I feel, you know, from all the changes that have needed to be implemented. Thank you.
Good way to look at it too. Thanks so much, Jason. All right, our next panelist that we're going to be talking with is Henry Yoon, again, from Deep Restaurant Group. Now, Henry, with Cafe Duck Butt in the Kaka'ako area, and then, of course, your restaurants in Kapolei on the west side, tell us a little bit about how things are going in town as well as the west side, and I guess what it was like pre-COVID and how it compares to the situation that we're in right now. So what adjustments have you made for each spot?
You know, that's a really good question. In many ways, Town and West Side, yeah, you know, Cafe Duck Butt and Mad Benny and Beauty Grill are clearly different concepts. But at the end of the day, what was very interesting for us was to look at Town and to look at the West Side, almost like a micro environment, microclimate. It was very different. I'll probably just start with DB Grill and Mad Benny. Look, you know, we had two restaurants. We were trying to grow. Mad Benny was only 2.5 months before this all happened. And so, you know, it was tough. And so, you know, we had to focus on different things to keep it surviving. So I guess the easiest way to look at it as a function of time, you know, on the West Side, DB Grill and Mad Benny, when the first shutdown, takeout was about 35% of revenues versus what it was in 2019. During the reopening, we had, you know, a lot of pent up demand, and obviously the stimulus checks and unemployment definitely helped. You know, we saw revenues rise to about 60 to 65% during that reopening of June and July, and we saw that slow down in August. And then with the second shutdown, you know, we've had revenues almost 15 to 20% because people are scared. So how do you adjust to those things? Well, again, you have to think about the community. And, you know, what we're doing is without any, you know, the fiscal stimulus wasn't passed today. And so we've adjusted by focusing on what the community needs, what our guests and customers need. Look, they want lower pricing points. They want family packs. You know, we're all at home teaching many of us are at home teaching our kids. And so it's difficult to go out and pick up lunch and come back. So, you know, these meal kits have made a big difference. So we've merged our operations just to be smart this second time around. And in Town, Town is a lot more competitive. Of course, we were a bar with great food, and we've had great success, and we're very thankful for that. But again, takeout the first time around was about 20%. Reopening was about 35%. And then we closed, obviously, in July with the mandate for bars. And we took that very seriously. We were not dependent. Business, we were not dependent on the state telling us what to do. I mean, in many ways, it was like a slow moving horror movie, right? It started in Asia and it moved further west. So, you know, we had connections into Hong Kong, into Korea, into Japan, into New York, into Chicago, into LA, and see what these guys were doing to adjust accordingly. And so we made those proper adjustments to our customer base here. But, you know, Town is tough. And what do? Again, with our lease ending at the end of this month for Duck Butt, we may have to make a decision to shut it down. So these are very tough decisions, which honestly, everybody on this panel has had to make. And a lot of us, even on the retail side, has had to make. And, you know, these outside exogenous factors, it can be overwhelming. So we have some tough choices to make, and that's what we're gonna decide, whether Duck Butt will close in Town or not. That's just the reality of things. But hopefully the other babies will survive.
Of course, hopefully all of them can, but unfortunately this is the reality that a lot of and most of the restaurant industry out here has been having to make. And so let's move on now to another neighbor island. Thanks so much, Henry. Now we're going to be talking with Gavin Onishi from Contemporary Flavors Catering. So Gavin, we want to know, tell us about what it's been like specifically on Kauai, and how has your business as well as other restaurants been affected by the pandemic? And I guess now that things are different on Kauai at the moment, how are things going for you at this time as well?
Us locals got to go back to the beach. That's what we got. Our entire island, similar to Maui, we rely on tourism. Without the tourists here, it's just not the same. We've got entire towns, you know, famous towns, Hanalei, that draws so much tourists there every single day that it's now a ghost town. And it's scary and it's somewhat depressing. But yeah, you tend to see a little bit of life there. You know, there's something there that can happen. We just got to figure out a way to do it. Like I said, we rely on tourism. Our business in general, when we first opened 22 years ago, we had almost 100% local. And then, you know, back in 98, 2000, peak here, some tourists here and there. Maybe it'll make up 2% of the business. Switch it up 15 years later, and we're talking 85% tourism and 50% local. That's right before pre-COVID too. During COVID, what we did to try, we didn't really do a lot of social media beforehand, but we pounded it. We hit it pretty hard during, and that helped us a lot to bring those locals back, you know, to the point where it's now it's 100% locals, and it has been pretty much this whole time. You know, some tourists are still sneaking through the quarantine, whatever, and they're coming to eat, but it, you know, it's locals. It's like, wow, locals coming back. Where you guys been? We missed you guys. You know what I mean? But for us, that everything has changed. I mean, all the stuff from the CDC, all the guidelines, hitting masks, hand washing, social distancing. Like, I might, you know, we didn't allow people to come into our restaurant to order anymore. Now we set up a thing outside. I get my brother-in-law's 20 by 20 tent sitting outside for a guest to come and order. So we're just bringing everything, you know, out that way. But everything's changed. The staffing's changed. We have to add on more people to accommodate, you know, the distance and the service to keep the service level up. But recently, you know, the trend's been going down again. You know, people are saving their money. They're not spending as much. And I'm having to cut people's hours to the point where I'm covering line shifts. You know, I'm covering prep shifts, you know, washing dishes, just to get my labor back down to the point where we can, you know, still stay open and keep my guys employed. That's the aim of my business for now, is to keep my guys employed, keep them busy, and just keep them working. So.
Thanks so much, Gavin. All right, now another big question is, do we think that our local restaurant industry will recover? I guess why and why not? And also, maybe the timing, if it's going to be anytime soon or not. So next up, we're going to be talking with Kevin Haney from 12th Avenue Grill. And Kevin, you know, as we were talking earlier, you made the very hard decision to close multiple of the restaurants, of course, recently 12th Avenue Grill temporarily as well. So what were the considerations that you took into account and that led you to make those decisions?
I'll try not to make a long story even longer, but it was a long process. This didn't happen, you know, overnight. So I think you have to start at the beginning, which is the first time around, the first closure. And March. And it was somewhat anticipated, but I was thinking, and I was having discussions with Leanne about Coco Head Cafe, and at that point in time, we just couldn't square what was going on out in the world with us sitting around saying, how do we pack a restaurant? I mean, it just wasn't making sense to us. So we made the decision before it was announced that we were going to go to takeout only. And doing so, once they made that announcement, I knew it was going to take a little longer than they said. I certainly didn't anticipate 6 months later we would be in even worse shape with no end in sight. So, but we were at 12th Avenue able to transition very quickly to full takeout. You know, we were doing right off the bat family meals, comfort food, delivery, steep discounts, and quite frankly, I was shocked at ourselves. We were doing quite well, you know, and so we were doing that, and then it came time to reopen, and so I looked at my restaurant, and I have 130 seats, so I counted, you know, where we could sit people, thought, oh, I have about 65 seats I can seat here, and so two seatings, that's 130 covers a night. Well, but you know, that's not bad. I could, do okay that way. But you know, what I didn't take into account was almost all my tables are four tops, and people were coming out mostly as couples. So my 65 per seating went down to 35, 40, you know, per seating. So I was doing 65 to 70 covers most nights. We had some good weekends. We did 120 some nights on the weekend. Our takeout dropped considerably at that time too. Like everybody's takeout dropped once all the restaurants opened. So now we're doing two menus, you know, one for dine-in, because that's what the dine-in people want. They want to come back to what they're used to having. And one that's a little more geared towards takeout. You know, it's more affordable. It travels better. It's what people are going to pay for. And, you know, so it was more, it was a lot of work to do that. So, but we saw in early July when the cases started spiking, our numbers started dropping. So, and our, you know, my business's ability to pay its bills, it's based on a certain amount of volume. You know, my salaries, insurance, rent, loans, utilities, they're all based on seating 130 seats multiple times. So, you know, with all that steep discounts, half seatings, drop in business, it just didn't make sense anymore. Not to mention there was another thing going on, and employees, along with everybody else, they were stressed. I mean, this was a stressful time for everybody. You know, anytime, you know, somebody sneezed, everybody wanted to know what to do. What do we do? You know, the sous chef calls in and says, well, my roommate's girlfriend was exposed to somebody, and I wasn't exposed to her, but, you know, my roommate was, and I'm exposed to him. So, you know, we're like, okay, you know, go home, don't stay here, go get tested. You know, we'll pay for it. And, you know, all of that is going on. And it was a pretty stressful time, you know, for everybody. So, you know, really, it started becoming, why are we doing all this to lose more money than being closed, you know? It was important to us, preserve our cash, be ready to open in the future, be strong, and, you know, don't bleed all the money now, bring people back, give them good jobs in the future, and let's get through this.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. And of course, we hope that all of your spots can open again soon, that we can be dining in it. One of my favorites, 12th Avenue, very, very shortly. All right, well, next up, we're going to be talking with Dylan Ching. Dylan's from TS Restaurants. And Dylan, of course, restaurant layoffs, they're widespread across the country. But here in Hawaii, we're hurting even more, of course, with the loss of tourism. So our economy, of course, relies heavily on that. So how do you see the industry recovering from this, if ever?
Well, if I knew that, I'd probably not have to be on this call. But I think that, you know, I think we will recover. I mean, I'm inherently optimistic. I mean, that's just the way I live. We will recover. It will look different, just like everybody says. We might have less. We might have to pivot in certain ways. But I do think we will recover. And I do think people will still believe in what we have in Hawaii, which is we're just a great, hospitable people. And they'll still want to be here. They'll still want to be part of what we do. Hopefully we'll be smarter about the way we do it. I think that's no doubt. I'm proud to be working in the tourism industry. I think a lot of people look down on that. I don't. I'm very proud to showcase and show people where I come from and where I live. And, you know, I want to do it in the right way. And I want to train and produce people that do that as well. I want to honor the local people. I'm born and raised in Lahaina. I grew up right on Front Street on that banyan tree. I want people to enjoy what I enjoy. So I think it will recover. I think it will look a little different for a while, but I think we will come out stronger. I think something to add to all of this, and I think it's said in a bunch of different ways. It doesn't matter if you're Duke's, which is, you know, one of the, you know, busiest restaurants in the state, or you're a small mom and pop restaurant. We are all hurting to the same degree. We all don't have cash. We all don't have resources. We all don't have rent relief. I mean, the rent, just think about your own personal life. What is your biggest expense? It's your rent or your mortgage. And if you can't do sales, just like Kevin and everybody said, you can't pay your mortgage. You can't pay your mortgage. You can't pay your employees. I mean, it's a vicious circle. We have to get something. I mean, we have to get something. No doubt there will be closures, and that's part of it. It's arguable if we were too bloated in the restaurant industry to begin with, we're going to lose some, but we don't want to lose them all. I mean, the first night of reopening, my wife and I, our favorite place to go is 12th Avenue Grill, and we went there the first night, and we don't want 12th Ave not to be there. We want 12th Ave to be there. And so if everybody out there listening wants us to be here, or, and lots of people that are on this call, I mean, we've got to do our part, and then we've got to support. And then, you know, hopefully the legislative body is, you know, working on ways to help us do this. We're not looking for necessarily a handout. We're all willing to work. We want to work hard, but this is a horrible situation that our industry has put in. And so we need a little bit more help than we normally do. But the restaurant industry, everybody will say it's a hardworking industry that works for small margins. But we do it because we love to serve people. And I believe that we will continue to do that.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Dylan. All right, now let's talk about, you know, what the future holds for your folks' restaurants and what it's going to be taking for those restaurants to survive. So Gavin from Contemporary Flavors Catering, now Dine-In Now Permitted, do you think Kauai restaurants are going to be on a path to recovery soon? Or as you were mentioning, you know, with tourism such a big part of your industry, do you think it's going to take time for the tourism to ramp back up again before you folks start to recover?
I'm extremely hopeful, but it seems fairly dismal. Right now, without tourists, you know, kind of like Kevin's situation to where, you know, with social distancing and tables and two tops coming in instead of four tops like you meant for, they're doing, you know, 40% of the business now than you know, they ever did before or are more than capable of doing. I think it's going to take extended amount of months, and you know, if we don't listen to the experts, you know, like, you know, we got an economist here, man. You know, if we don't listen to the experts, it's gonna take a lot of months and several months to get out of. So for Outer Island, and you know, with Young Brothers tax kicking in also, you know, we're on Kauai, we're in the same boat as Maui and Big Island. That additional cost and add-on, you know, something that at the beginning I can't expect my guests to pay. You know, I just can't raise the prices that steep, that for that fast and that quickly. And I'm going to lose them all. but it's going to be hard, but it's going to take a lot of time, and people just need to realize that it's going to take months. It might even take years. I really don't know. It's very uncertain, but we'll get there. Who's to be left standing is still, you know, up for question, but we're trying our best, and you know, the community here is trying to support each other, and the chefs here are just trying to support each other. You know, I'm in contact with a few of them, you know, some of my classmates, you know, fairly constantly, and together we'll get through it somehow. But yeah, I'm hopeful.
Thanks so much, Gavin. And as Gavin said, you know, of course, everyone is trying to support everyone, and we're wanting to listen to the experts. And that's the thing, the folks in the restaurant industry have been doing that. You know, as Kevin and Leanne were talking earlier, you know, they even made some changes before they were even mandated to. So the restaurant industry wants to do the right thing. I mean, they made all of the changes, they followed all the regulations, they were doing it the right way. And then of course, it's not always feasible, you know, with the restrictions. So hopefully things can come that makes more sense for a restaurant industry to reopen. But of course, they all want to be doing it in a safe way for themselves, for their workers, as well as for the community. All right, so now with that, Henry from TV Restaurant Group. Now for restaurants like yours on Oahu, where dine-in is closed, and we're now in, of course, our second stay-at-home order, now it's been extended, what do you think it's going to take for your restaurants to survive?
That's a great question, Kelly. I hope we all knew the answer. No, but in my personal opinion, and I guess you can read it online and see what the industry is doing overall globally, I think it's a combination of three main factors here. One is we're going to need fiscal stimulus. You know, PPP, PPP helped us the first time around. I think the second shutdown threw the proverbial curveball, and many of us were not necessarily ready for a second round of funding. So fiscal stimulus is one. Secondly, locally, we just need more robust, trustworthy, and timely state and county resources. Look, I think Hawaii is one of the worst in terms of state sponsorship for access to capital for small businesses. So, you know, we need to change that. Maybe the state can do certain interesting things like help us do, you know, for an industry perspective, do bridge loans, letters of credit, link us to banks, figure out ways to bridge this second shutdown. So that's just an example. Another thing I think finally would be addressing the community needs. What the state and at the county level can do is sort of link people with food insecurity to restaurants, right? We've seen those type of programs in New York, and even out of LA and other major cities in on the mainland. Look, we've been involved in Chef Hui, Shoaloa Challenge, and many of us were involved in the industry, and it's been extremely helpful. Linking us to communities and communities in needs, that's one way the state can help, right? We have, you know, everyone's staying at home. We have schools probably gonna open up in sometime in October. You know, there are ways to use funding from the national level as well as the state level to address the sort of the food insecurities. And finally, I think, you know, as an industry, we have to figure out how do we extend hospitality to the home. Look, we all agree this is going to be here for a while. A while could be a couple of months, 3 to 6 months. So, you know, if this is that new normal, how do we extend that restaurant hospitality that we love and enjoy for what we do? And how do we extend it to our guests and customers' homes, right? So that's another thing that we are already thinking about. How do we extend that hospitality to the home as opposed to just in the restaurant?
Thanks, Henry. And Henry mentioned also, some stimulus help. And actually, I don't know if, I'm sure most of you have heard, but just today, the GOP bill on the coronavirus aid was blocked by Democrats in the Senate. And we may not potentially get something passed until now. They're talking the end of the election, potentially late November. So we really need our local government to step up and help our small businesses. So what exactly is the government support that we need for the restaurant industry from our federal government, as well as, of course, our state and local counties? So let's check in with Leanne Wong from Papa'aina at Pinehaven. Leanne, what are you hoping our government can put into action?
Well, you know, obviously we have over $500 million that we are still trying to figure out where that money is being allocated and how it's being allocated. I know they had a plan. The last like sort of publicized plan for the money was back in, I think the news reported it back in like June, maybe. So, as far as Oahu and Cocoa Head, we've been working on a resolution that would basically help pay property tax and like make sure that like rent gets paid. That's the biggest thing. I think rent is the biggest crutch for everybody at this point. We are seeing restaurants close down for good daily. And that is a huge problem. Henry was sent out some information yesterday about what's going on with the independent restaurant coalition, and there's federal stimulus money. We had the PPP, the PPP is interesting because that's very fluid as well, you know, and so that was extended. I think we have till the end of October right now, but what if we're closed till the end of October, you know, and does that money automatically go to the 1% loan? Like, you know, it's just, everything is just so in flux at this point. And so from a very local level, you know, from a state level, we're looking, I think, you know, Kevin put up a great proposal to the mayor regarding opening parklets, using outdoor space, parking lots, streets that aren't necessarily thoroughfares, and really creating outdoor dining space, which has been actually very clutch for us at Pioneer Inn. And as far as Kaimuki and Cocoa Head, you know, we've been working with the Kaimuki Business Association and the Hawaii Restaurant Association in asking our state legislators for aid, for money for rent relief, because I think that's really what's happening is, you know, some businesses have, their landlords have been flexible and obviously compassionate and understanding what's going on. And then there are other other people who basically, you know, it's like the landlords are charging full rent. And it's, you know, they have bills to pay too, in their defense, I get that. But at the same time, you know, how can the state work to alleviate both parties? You know, how can we help each other and compromise? I think that's really it. And so there, you know, the fact that that conversation is actually happening now is wonderful. You know, the parklets, hopefully they're happening. There is a big project going on that, you know, would incorporate Better Block Hawaii, the American Society of Landscape Architecture Hawaii, and the UH School of Architecture. So there's a proposal going on to build these like really cool parklets in these spaces, and you know, that was talked about a month ago. I don't know where that is now, but everything, we have to be flexible. We have to be, you know, oh, you're cold? I'm sorry. Hold on, Naked Bear. My kid just got out of the tub. Sorry. you know, we moving, I think, especially for Honolulu, where everything is so crowded, I think being able to utilize outdoor spaces, sidewalks, et cetera, parking lots, you know, it's like municipal parking. It's like, well, no one's going to spend money on municipal parking if they're all the businesses are closed. You know what I mean? So, you know, those are solutions and ways that I think our local government can work with us and coordinate, help to coordinate, and just really, I think, listen to the restaurant industry, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, you think about tourism, you think about what the fabric of a community is, and it's these, you know, it's these food businesses that we have that are places where people gather. You know, it's like, if you think about the importance of food and how often we eat and that meal or waking up and thinking about what you're going to eat, or you're going to go meet somebody for lunch at like, I'm going to go have lunch at MW and have Michelle's pastries. You know, it's like, I think about that and I anticipate that, you know, if you think about how that affects our mood, how that affects just our daily lives, just the purpose of going out to eat and enjoying a meal and seeing people. I think it's so important. We have to get back there, and it's not going to happen without help from our local and federal government, you know, and it's super scary that we might have to wait till November, but it's all the more important that we vote. So that's where we're at.
Much, Leanne. All right, and then Jason, let's expand on that a bit more. You know, what do you think the government should be doing? You know, Leanne was mentioning some really great ideas that other portions of the world, other parts of even this country, as well as around the world, have been implementing. So our officials need to be maybe open-minded, flexible for things like that. What do you think the government should be doing to help out?
You know, first of all, I would echo everything that Leanne said. You know, at Zippy's, we have an excellent leadership team, but we know that we are not effective unless we listen to our managers and our team members. They're on the front line, and they understand best, you know, how we can make good decisions. And I think that applies, you know, to our state and county leaders, that there are people in industry with passion, with know-how, with knowledge that can contribute to good decision-making. And what I found from my experience on committees, task force, and what I've heard from others is that, you know, there are meetings, right? And we are invited to participate. But what we found is that our voice is not really heard, and our voice is not really considered in ways that it could be. And I think there's almost an underappreciation of the contributions that those within industry, those in the front line, can really contribute, you know, to good decision-making. You know, I'll bring up an example, and I, you know, won't stay on it very long, but, you know, several years ago, Bill 40 was introduced, and Bill 40, you know, today represents a ban on, you know, certain materials for food service. But when it was originally introduced, it would have pretty much closed down all manufacturing on Oahu. And the reason that it came out that way is industry was not invited, you know, in the early rounds on when Bill 40 was promulgated. And it's just, I bring it up because it's a great example of what the outcome becomes when industry is not invited to the table. And today, ironically, you know, Bill 40 is going to have devastating impacts on January 1, you know, to all restaurants, and it's going to have even further dramatic effects, you know, in about 16 months at a time when industry will just be recovering. So one thing I would echo that Leanne said, what we're doing internally is we're telling our employees, you must register to vote. You must vote. We need you to be involved. Vote who you believe in. It's never been so easy to be involved, to vote, and it's so important. We are seeing today the importance of good leadership, you know, and unless we get involved, you know, we cannot make a change. One of the things I will share is that the Chamber of Commerce is going to come out with candidate endorsements for the first time ever. And this was a decision made because of the COVID situation. And this type of endorsement is not, it's going to be very different from the special interest groups. We're not promising any monies in return, you know, for the endorsement. What we're asking, all we're asking is listen to our voice, take our input, make the best decision, but allow us to be on the table. And if you're willing to do that, you know, we support you, you know, in public office. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jason. All right, and now we're going to talk to all the panelists about the kind of community support and involvement that's needed right now for the restaurant industry. So let's start with Chad Yang from Hula Hulas. Chad, what do we need from the community at this time?
I actually don't have the answer for this question, but I do have a lot of thoughts kind of gathered. So, you know, bottom line comes down to fund. If the, like my staff, I want to say most, a lot of Hilo, they live paycheck to paycheck. And if they're not getting their money, unemployment fund from back in March, and some are getting it now, there's no money to spend. So, you know, what I ask for the community to be kind of, you know, to be aware is, right, you know, we cannot survive on takeout only. That's a fact. And, you know, we're asking the audience to for support, you know, buy local, eat local. When I say buy local, it doesn't mean go to Walmart and shop at your local Walmart. It's go to the farmer's market, support the family that's growing the zucchini, the papaya, or the tomato. Because, you know, it's what we, you know, it's everyone. I think that's, and, you know, hope for the best, be proactive. And it's more like, yeah, that's my thoughts.
You're on mute.
Sorry about that. All right, next up, can we head over to Kevin Hanney from 12th Avenue Grill? Can we get your input on the kind of community service or community?
Yeah, you know, first, I'd like to start off with that the restaurant business will survive. I mean, we'll always need restaurants, and they are a cultural part of our communities, as Leanne said. You know, it's where people gather. It's where you see people. It's where you have discussions. It's where you, you know, share meals. It's where you have parties. It's all of that. You know, we still need that, and we'll survive. Unfortunately, there will be casualties due to this, and we don't know who. I mean, it could surprise us who ends up being the ones that don't make it here. You know, just because somebody's big, it doesn't mean they're going to make it. You know, and moving forward, I think, you know, I have said we'll reopen when the health, safety, and business climate is more amenable to doing business. I really feel one and two, the health and safety, I think we're going to be there very soon. I think, you know, they figured out a lot, everything. business climate is a different story, and that's going to really depend on when the community feels safe going out. And that's what we've got to work on, you know, getting people to feel safe going out. And that's where we need really the government to help with that. We need them to step in. We need them to be clear. We need some plans. I know they don't have all the answers. This has been a fluid situation. But we really need a plan, and we need people feeling safe. And so we need people to be active in the in politics and vote, like they said. You know, let's get people in there that can. It's not to say the people now are, you know, horrible or anything, but let's really look at who has a plan, who has a good plan. Let's get them in charge. Let's move forward that way. Let's, you know, forget about what happened in the past. Let's move forward with a plan. And I think that's very important. So, and by the way, all those parklets, there was going to be a parking day on September 18th to start showing what we can do with those parklets. Of course, that's been moved backwards. We don't know when that's going to be.
Okay, well, keep us posted. Yeah. All right, thanks so much, Kevin. All right, now, Dylan Ching, can you share your thoughts, Dylan, from TS Restaurants?
You know, I think what everybody can do is, you know, educate themselves, you know, take it really seriously and, you know, keep bringing the numbers down. Like everybody else said, I think vote. And, you know, we need to get that confidence back that you know, in everybody. The government needs to be confident in letting people come back. And, you know, the visitor, or I mean, the local community has to be confident that we're doing a good job in providing a safe environment. And I think that once those things come back, I think that we'll make recovery and, you know, we'll be better for it in the long run. I think some of the things like, you know, health checks and not letting people work when they're sick. I think some of these things that will be with us for a while will inevitably help everybody in the long run. So I just think the general public just needs to keep, you know, educating themselves and paying attention, and when they go to a place, if they're doing a good job, keep going back to them. So that's all.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Dylan. All right, Jason Higa from FCH Enterprises and Zippies.
Yeah, Kelly, I guess I would, you know, echo a couple things. I think Paul mentioned in his open presentation about, you know, bucks for low lows. I mean, I think that as a community, we have to do a better job of doing the right thing. What I see is that actually businesses are doing a great job in, you know, asking our employees, our customers to do the right thing. Yet out in our community, you know, we often make poor decisions. So as a community, I think we do have to do a better job about taking care of each other. Number two, you know, Kevin mentioned about, you know, the lack of clarity by our governmental leaders. And I think not just clarity, but transparency is so important during this time. How are decisions being made? What are the metrics that are being used? The clarity and the transparency and of that question is so key. And we in industry can do a better job of responding and making the changes, but we need to have transparency in the decision-making process. Thank you.
All right, thanks so much, Jason. All right, Henry Yoon from ZB Restaurant Group.
Sorry, mute issues. you know, I think a lot has been said and a lot has been covered. I think try to change the tone into a more positive note. You know what we need is more of these type of events, right? You know, we depend on the media a lot, right? And you know, for us as restaurateurs, getting our message across from traditional and non-traditional means, you know, I do have to thank the media. They've been great to us at Mad Benny and DB Grill everywhere. And I just think, you know, we, you know, I don't know what there's more to be said. It's really more about action at this point. And as long as our voices within our industry can be heard, as long as it falls into the right, it falls to the right ears, I think we've accomplished a lot today in and of itself.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Henry. All right, Leanne Wong.
Hi. You know, I think this is a big wake-up call for the entire state, you know, and I always used to say, people would interview me, like, what's it like to live in Hawaii? And I'm like, well, imagine, like, it's crazy because we live in the most isolated place in the world, but it's really beautiful. And I always said, you know, what if the boats and the planes stop coming? You know, what's going to happen? And this is a version of that. So... I think it's, you know, we have to figure out as a state how to reinvest in ourselves and, you know, diversifying our economy. We need our, you know, people in the state of Hawaii, all of our customers, all of our, you know, everybody who's hungry, like, you know, stop spending money at McDonald's. That's pretty much it. So stop spending money at chain restaurants where the money does not go back into the community. You know, you want to utilize, you want to, you know, the mom and pop places that have been around for generations, the new restaurants, I mean, all of these, you know, these Zippies, my God, Zippies, you know, like, I mean, Jason, I don't know how many people you guys employ all in all. I think you ran those numbers by me earlier. But you know, it's, we want to support businesses that are all about the state of Hawaii and all about the community. And while, yes, those other businesses provide jobs, you know, we're talking about where we're sourcing our food, you know, working with local farmers, fishermen, et cetera, et cetera. So that's, you know, that's the biggest thing, is that I think we need to take a look as a state and figure out how we can just, you know, really envision, you know, a world with reduced tourism, you know, and how can we be prosperous again? I think that's, you know, we live in the most beautiful state in the world. And there's, we see rainbows every day. And so I think that we have a lot of hardworking, creative, you know, just so much great energy here. That, you know, the restaurant industry, this is a really, really tough time. We're going to lose more businesses than, we would like to. And I think, you know, as a chef, and I know Kevin, I've had that talk with Kevin, like, we've had to come to terms with the idea of potentially shutting down the business, you know, and what would happen if that was permanent, you know? So those are all things that I've considered and I've had to come to terms with, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, we're just going to keep moving forward. I mean, that's really, as cooks, as restaurateurs, as industry, as business people, that's really all we can do, you know, is just keep putting out the good food and keep, you know, trying to deliver the spirit of aloha. So, yeah.
Thanks so much, Leanne. All right. And finally,
sorry, can I just add one point? One thing I wanted to add, and it was actually brought up by our economist, Paul, on our notes yesterday. I think he made a great point. There's one thing I think it's really key, because we never know. There could be a third lockdown in the future, right? But I think the state has been so focused on, as our economist pointed out, into date dependency as opposed to data dependency. So if we can move to where we, as entrepreneurs, as restaurateurs, as, you know, any iteration of in terms of business, if we can understand what the scales are and we can adjust to our businesses accordingly and not just so be dependent on the whims of a date. And I think that would help us. And I think that the community would help us, right? So let's be more data dependent as opposed to date dependent. And I think as a community, as an industry, we'll all be a lot more focused as opposed to just looking at on that date on the clock.
Kelly, I'm going to hijack this point a little, and I want to show something that I was looking at while I'm listening to other people. These are the data that the state itself publishes on case counts, you know, per person, basically, And you can just, you don't have to be a math major. You can just look at the shape. You can see how the numbers swelled at the end of summer, mostly on Oahu, but you can see how they're now coming down. And if you're following these numbers, and they're coming down daily, when I started making my slides a couple days ago, I realized every day I'm going to have to update because they're coming down so fast over here on Oahu. That's a good thing. That means we should already be preparing for some time. I would estimate in the next 10, you know, to 15 days, being able to pull the trigger if we're already in position to reopen parts of the economy. And if we had the protocols already decided, if we knew how we were going to reopen tourism, I'm pretty sure places like Kauai and even Maui with direct flights, even though they've had a little flurry of cases in the last several weeks, they're already in a position to move forward. You can find all this stuff online. The transmission rate I talked about, which is below one right now, that means each person who's infected is transmitting to fewer than one other person on average. That's a good place to be. We were not at this place just, you know, a month ago. In this email chain we've had amongst some of ourselves prepping for this, if you think on the news tonight, your colleagues talked about today's temperature was 90 degrees, the trade winds slowed to 15 miles per hour, and the wave heights are all 2 to 4 feet. We all know that. Every day it's on the news. Why isn't the case count, the transmission rate, and the positivity rate for tests, which has come down a lot, it's 4% on Oahu, 2% on the Big Island, and less than 1%. Fewer than 1 out of 100 people now on Maui and Kauai that are tested are testing positive. That's like a green light to get it together and move forward safely, coherently, with a plan that we should already know. And as Henry importantly pointed out, not based on some arbitrary date. It's not date dependent, it's data dependent. And then we can go forward.
Awesome, thanks, Paul. And you gotta be watching KH1 too, because actually North Shore was 3 to 5 foot faces today. And we do give the case counts and the numbers tested, but I digress. All right, but next up, of course, let's finish with your final thoughts, Gavin Onishi. Oh, Gavin's gone. Oh, yes, it's a little bit out there. All right, I think I'm going to toss it back over to Denise, but thank you so much to our amazing panel. I know we went over, but our amazing panel had so many great things to say, so I hope you all learned a lot, and I'm going to toss it back over to Denise, but thank you all so much for participating and for listening.
Wow, this has been such an eye-opening discussion on what's been going on with our local restaurants. Thank you all for joining the conversation. I want to thank Aubrey Baker. Thank you so much, Paul, for your comments tonight. And I also want to thank all of our panelists tonight who joined us. It was a pretty long evening at 7:30, and we had some great questions from the audience, but what we'll do is we'll take those questions and we'll send them out to our panelists, and then we'll send them back out in an email so you get those answers to your questions. We're sorry that this discussion just took a little longer than we expected. For those of you who are able to add on an eat and drink order to your event registration, we thank you for your contribution, as proceeds from every order goes back to supporting the Hawaii Agriculture Foundation and our programs. Our featured restaurants tonight, I just want to mention Kona Brewing Company, Koko Pub in Hawaii Kai, and Kona Pub on the island of Hawaii, Go In Dining and Bar, Mad Bene, Izakaya Nombe, Duke's Waikiki, Papa Aina at the Pioneer Inn, Lineage, Eating House 1849 at the shops at Kupui Ula and Hula Hula's. Thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate all of you being part of the conversation. Actually, I'm sorry, before we sign off, we have to choose 3 lucky winners to receive a refillable Hydro Flask growler from Kona Brewing Company and a $50 gift card. Do we have the winners? This is kind of exciting. We're trying to figure this out now.
Drum roll, please.
Derek Gabriel.
Mary Spadaro.
Woo-hoo!
And Zachary Delano.
Woo-hoo! Congratulations. And for all of you tuning in on Oahu, we're excited to offer all of you a dozen eggs from Hawaiian made or Kalae or Kalei eggs. You can pick up your eggs from Eggs Hawaii next week, starting Wednesday, September 16th through Saturday, October 3rd. We'll be sending an email out to everyone with details on how you can redeem this gift from Eggs Hawaii. Next, our Eat, Think, Drink Open for Business series will be Female Power During COVID-19 on October 7th. So make sure you subscribe to our newsletter so you can be first to get tickets. Until then, we hope you stay connected and continue the conversation as we move forward to a stronger and more resilient Hawaii. On behalf of the Hawaii Agriculture Foundation, mahalo for your support of our local agriculture and our food industries. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you very much.
Bye.
And ending from?
Yeah.